Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Lori Nadel back with us, a noted author. A couple books include The Five Gifts and Dr. Lori Nadel's Sixth Sense. She has been specializing as a psychotherapist and consultant and has been working on ESP and the acute stress plagued by so many people right now, including anxiety and vivid precognitive dreams. Lori, welcome back. Always good to have you.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me back on the show.
How's life?
Oh, well, it's busy, as you can imagine. It's kind of crazy times.
Yeah, it really is. And you're still on the East Coast, aren't you?
I'm on the East Coast, yeah. I go back and forth between New York and the lovely, really crazy state of Florida.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. And you witnessed this COVID stuff. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's certainly very puzzling, and it's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, it really is, and it's a difficult situation for a lot of people. You've looked at this. Anxiety levels, all-time high, aren't they?
Anxiety levels were at 8.2% at the end of 2019, and at the beginning of 2021, up to 42%, and that's from several different studies. I mean, that's a huge jump.
Yeah, it really is. And so what have you been working on these days?
Well, I have two free online support groups for people who have, we call them long haulers. They're people who have long COVID. One is a group for firefighters, and it's we're running it through Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Department. So any firefighter who has long COVID, is trying to work or has had to stop work, is welcome to reach out to me through the website. And the other group is open to the public. It's free on Sunday nights. It's with the Pulmonary Wellness Foundation. And, you know, to put it very simply, any chronic illness, but especially this one, really plays games with your head. And it's very isolating. And, of course, you read all of the different conflicting stories in the media. And it doesn't matter which media it is. It seems like every day there's another study that contradicts something that
yes.
you read about a couple of days ago.
Confusing.
So, we just offer support and information.
Tell me your thoughts about precognition, ESP. How did you start focusing in on that arena?
Well, 30 years ago, my first career was in media and journalism.
That's right.
And interestingly, and I started to notice that a few days before a really big event, the newsroom would get really quiet. And, you know, if you've been to a newsroom, you know, the phones are always going and the wire machines are always going. And, you know, you've got satellite feeds coming in from all over the world with all kinds of disasters, you know, plane crashes and wars. And all of a sudden, everything would get really quiet and the phones would stop ringing and somebody would make a joke and like, oh, it's too quiet. The news god is going to strike. And usually within 2 days, there would be some mega breaking news event that would happen, a major disaster or some kind of a war event or bombing. I remember it got really quiet before a big earthquake in Mexico. It got quiet before a major volcano somewhere. And also 2 days, I don't know if you remember, when there was a suicide bomber at the U.S. Embassy compound in Lebanon.
Oh, yeah.
In 1983.
Yep. In Beirut. Yep.
Right, Beirut. And it was a few days before the Marines invaded Grenada. It got very quiet. I remember the Thursday before that happened. It happened, I think, over the weekend or on a Monday. And so we started to notice that there seemed to be some energy. There seemed to be something in the field, if you will, or what some people call, what Jung calls the collective unconscious. Something would happen energetically, and it was a signal that there was going to be some big disturbing event. And that got me really curious, and I started doing research for what was my first book, which is Sixth Sense, Unlocking Your Ultimate Mind Power, which you and Art Bell have been very kind to have me on to talk about over the years.
And talking about earthquakes, Mexico just had a 7.0 just hit out there. What a disaster. It's crazy. But
yeah.
Princeton University has done research in that area as well, Dean Radin and his group, that had to do with 9/11. And they sensed something was happening before it happened They can't tell you what, but they could tell you something was going to go.
Yes, apparently there was some kind of shift in the Schumann resonance, which is the, we call it the heartbeat of the Earth. I think it's normally 7.8. I'm sorry, I don't quite remember exactly what it was, but it went up considerably, and that heartbeat of Hertz went into the wavelength of agitation and disturbance. I don't know if you remember the stories about the woodpecker signal, which was something that the Soviets were reported to be beaming out towards the United States, but it was a wavelength that caused agitation. And there have been all kinds of stories over the years of kind of electromagnetic combat, if you will, in the 1970s and 1980s. So the Earth's electromagnetic field changes apparently before a big event, and people start having precognitive dreams, sometimes even a year before a major event like 9/11.
We're with Dr. Lori Nadel. Her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You are seeing a lot of precognitive dreams these days tied into some of these events, aren't you?
I've been seeing precognitive dreams peaking or spiking before, going back to before 9/11, before last year, two years ago, I guess, January of 2020, December 2019, before the pandemic, and a couple of weeks ago, before the evacuation in Kabul. Keeping my editorial opinions out of the description.
Yeah, I get it.
But it was really the nightmare of Kabul. People were calling me. I must have had about 24 calls from people from all over the country saying that they had this terrible feeling of dread, that it was similar to 9/11, that they were waking up feeling like something horrible and ominous was about to happen. And I think there's something in the field. The collective unconscious is what Jung called it, and I think that we pick up that data sometimes when we sleep.
Why can't we, or is it specific enough where some people know exactly what's happening? But I would say mostly these precognitive dreams are events, but they don't know what they are.
Most of the time we don't know what they are, but there's a lot of research that shows that I know in my own practice, the first precognitive dream about 9/11 happened to a client who lived in, it was reported by someone, who lived in Lower Manhattan, and she literally dreamed the whole attack from the ground. The air was filled with smoke and dust, and people were running uptown, and there was noise, and she didn't see the actual attack, but she dreamt the aftermath of the attack. Hundreds of people in New York City reported dreams to their therapists in the year leading up to 9/11 about planes flying into skyscrapers, about the image of the tarot from the Rider-Waite tarot card with people flying out of the tower, people jumping from the tower, flames coming out of the tower, birds, which are often universally seen as kind of birds of prey, as ominous symbols, birds flying into towers, into tall buildings. Children in California a few days before 9/11 were building Legos and piles of blocks and then knocking them down.
Jeez.
With airplanes. So we knew.
Wow.
Collectively. We didn't know what, but we knew.
A couple days before 9/11, my first daughter called me and said, "Dad, I had the strangest dream." And I said, "What happened, Wendy?" And she said, I'm dreaming that I'm in a big city, like a Chicago or New York, and I'm walking down the street, and I'm walking in a foot of dust and debris, and I'm looking up to the sky, and all I could see are snowflakes of dust falling down on me.
God.
We didn't know what it was.
Right.
And then she, a couple days later, 9/11 happens. She calls and wakes me up, says, "Dad, you got to turn on the television. You won't believe what's happening." And I did, and she's still on the phone with me, and she said, "That's my dream," because you could see stuff, particles float, after, and all the dust and the debris and everything else. She had one.
Oh, that's pretty. Oh, my God, that's kind of amazing. I'm getting chills. I'm getting chills. A lot of people dreamt about the dust and the smoke and people in the street, crowds. And, yeah, and whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that we don't dream about exactly what's going to happen in detail and that our conscious mind knows, but the subconscious or the unconscious knows, and to the collective unconscious, certainly in this country, 9/11 was not a surprise. And also, if we go back to, you know, the imagery of 9/11, we think about movies. I'm thinking about Japanese horror movies from the 1950s, where New York is under attack by some kind of monster, or
right.
You remember some of the scenes. I'm thinking of, say, King Kong or the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Or Gorgo.
Planes kind of attacking the Empire State Building.
Godzilla.
These images have been in our collective psyche for many generations.
At what point, Lori, or maybe we never will, put this together where the precognitive dream will show you exactly what and where?
No, I think that raises an interesting question that people ask me. Why do some people, why are some people psychic? I know a lot of psychics say that everyone is psychic. And for some people, we all have some degree of psychic ability. But for some people, or probably most of us, it's kind of like playing chopsticks on the piano. We can all learn how to do it. But some people can play Mozart at Carnegie Hall, and there's only one Mozart. So I think there are people who are highly psychic and highly intuitive, but it's a question of degree, and I think it may be genetic. So as we evolve, and this is very interesting because I've been talking to people about this a lot. Dr. Jonas Salk, who invented the Salk vaccine,
mm-hmm.
wrote a book called Intuition, Merging of Reality, the Anatomy of Reality, the Merging of Intuition and Reason. And he said back in the 1980s that if we do not evolve into a more intuitive, empathic species, we will make ourselves extinct. And when I interviewed the late Dr. Roger Sperry, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the left and right brains, he said the same thing to me. He said, we will make ourselves extinct as a species if we continue to glorify kind of the left brain, kind of logical intelligence and arrogance and greed, and if we don't become more intuitive and what we call right-brained and empathic and realize that we're all interconnected, until it's wired into our DNA, we run the risk of wiping ourselves out as a species.
Why are these precognitive dreams causing anxiety? How come?
Well, I think that when people have a sense of dread, I go back also to 2012, before Hurricane Sandy, dozens of people, 6 months before that event, were reporting to me that they had a sense of impending catastrophe, similar to the summer before 9/11. And I think, right now there is, of course, many reasons for collective anxiety. We have instability. We're living in a cycle of turbulence. We have multiple disasters happening at the same time. We have instability. There's war. There's certainly the pandemic itself, never mind all of the theories or possibilities about how it started and where it's going. So I think that precognitive dreams feed into that sense of discomfort and being troubled by the magnitude of uncertainty that we're living with.
You've heard of Lynn McTaggart. You probably know Lynn.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, we were talking last week about intention, and I asked her a specific question. I said, is the one just as strong as the many when it comes to some kind of intention experiment? And she said no. She said the many collectively are bigger and it works better than the one. And I still have problems understanding that. Because I'm wondering if there's that one individual out there who is so good at this, he or she far outshines the group. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a really, really powerful question. I think that there are, there are quote-unquote evil geniuses. There are people who are able to tap into, you know, the forces, if you will, or archetypal forces of destruction, just like there are archetypal forces of love and compassion. And I think that certainly that is quite understandable that there could be several ones, as you say, out there who have the ability to kind of create or generate a kind of a malignant kind of event like the pandemic or like a wave of conflict and combat or malevolent kind of events, which we're certainly seeing in the news. You're seeing a lot of violence on a scale that even after 20 years working in newsrooms, I've never seen a wave of such bizarre violent events as we're seeing right now. And it could be that there is, you know, one or two, or that there are several people who know how to tap into that fury and rage and to generate a cycle, which is what we're set in this case, a cycle of behavior that is very destructive.
What is, Lori, the sixth sense phenomena?
Sixth sense, of course, is, I shouldn't say of course, but sixth sense is the ability to perceive something spontaneously without the conscious use of reasoning. And when we're specifically talking about the sixth sense, I like to think of it as like a satellite dish in the brain that's able to pick up impressions from something unseen, whether we're talking about the collective unconscious or whether we're talking about something telepathic, or picking up something that's going on in somebody else's mind, or being able to do what remote viewers do, which is to, you know, pick up on a target in a different geographic location or at another point in time. So I think of it as a kind of a satellite dish and a kind of data collection ability that everybody has, as I said, to one degree or another.
Does ESP have anything to do with this, extrasensory perception?
I think extrasensory perception is the way we describe people who have the awareness and the gift, if you will, of going into that sixth sense part of the mind at will, and being able to pick up events or targets of things that haven't happened yet, or dream about people who you haven't seen in a long time, and then suddenly that person appears in your life after you've had a dream. So I think of ESP as the ability to harness the sixth sense, but that's my personal definition of it.
Do you find, Lori, that most successful people in business or life in general have these abilities?
Absolutely. You know, George, I've interviewed, and in my book, Sixth Sense, I've interviewed quite a number of very successful business visionaries and creative people, Francis Ford Coppola and Arianna Huffington, were two of the people that I interviewed, as well as some very, very successful business entrepreneurs in the fashion industry, and everybody attributed their success to being able to trust that hunch or follow that vision and follow that sixth sense. And actually, one of my favorite stories and one of my favorite people actually was an inventor named Jerry Prine in Utah. And Jerry had a fourth grade reading level. He was dyslexic. Used to have people read roadsides to him when he was driving during the era before GPS, and he would see in his mind's eye the design of surgical instruments and other technical engineering devices, and he actually used that sixth sense to successfully design some vacuum-based devices that NASA used on the first mission to the moon. And he said that he attributed his success to being able to capture and execute what he saw in his sixth sense.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.